called Soccer Talk Podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Coming up on episode 71, we feature an exclusive interview with Telemundo commentators about their preparations for this summer's World Cup. We discuss which sports TV network has lost more than 600,000 subscribers in the last year, who Martin Tyler will be commentating the World Cup for this summer, as well as lots of soccer media news for you from around the world. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm not joined today by Kartik Krishnaiyer. Unfortunately, he's out sick, so I'm going to go solo. So this episode is brought to you by Sling TV's Best of Spanish TV package, which is bringing you El Clasico this weekend. Now, what we've been watching this past week, so let's start off with that. And for me, the theme for the last few weeks has been focusing on the relegation battle at the bottom of the Premier League. Actually, for me personally, I've been watching the relegation battle since August, since Swansea played their first game, but that's another story. But seriously, the relegation battle has produced some really entertaining games the past few weeks. Most importantly, the win by Southampton against Bournemouth this past Saturday on NBCSN, which was a thrilling game for anyone who missed it, especially the last 15 minutes. The 2-1 result puts Southampton back in the race to potentially avoid relegation, and it's that crazy time of the year when the top of the table is already decided, but it really is the relegation battle that is, to me, the most attractive, nail-biting time. And for a neutral, it's probably better than for the actual supporter, seeing the highs and lows and just trying to experience that. As a fan that's caught right up in the middle of it, myself included, it's agonizing. Now, in terms of some of the other games from this past week, I saw quite a few, actually. I'm just going to pick some at random here. The LAFC Seattle Sounders game, which was the first game from the Bank of California Stadium. I thought the camera positions in the new stadium looked great. That stadium looks fantastic on television. The game, not so much, but still it was exciting to see the first game played there. Then also, of course, we had the Champions League this past week, and we had, of course, some thrilling games yet again. And for whatever reason, the Champions League this season seems to be more entertaining than it has been for several years. And for me, I think that John Strong and Stuart Holden are doing great. Stuart Holden is getting better game after game. My only concern or criticism really is what Kartik said, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, that he would like to see these guys in the stadiums in Europe commentating these games. And it's doable, of course, with the game on Tuesday in Madrid, and the game on Wednesday in Rome. I mean, it's pretty easy to fly back and forth from city to city. That's the only shame of the matter. But good games. And Real Madrid, Liverpool in the final. That's going to be fantastic. And let me scroll through here and see some of my other notes for some of the other games I saw. Anything else that jumped out? The Inter against Juventus game. Another incredible game here from Serie A. It's right going down to the wire. It looks like with Napoli dropping points, it looks like it's going to be Juve to win it. But in this game too, with Inter and Juve, I mean, there was a red card. There was an early goal. Juve bounced back to win it 3-2. In an incredible game, if you missed that one. The Man United-Arsenal game, for me, it felt like a Arsene Wenger testimonial match. Really, really boring game, and just a shame, really, in Wenger's last game there at Old Trafford, and also, of course, the Europa League. Kind of a disappointing way to drop out of that tournament, but fair play to Atleti for playing fantastic over the two legs. One more thing, too, I just want to mention is that for the Roma-Liverpool game, the pre-game analysis on this one from Fox was better and more serious. And I think the difference is having Ian Joy there in the studio on the set instead of Eric Winalda. And Ian's definitely more serious, and I think it elevates Warren Barton and Alexi Lalas to try harder and think more tactically or think harder about the game. So that I enjoyed. The other thing I did enjoy too was just the pre-match noise from the Olympic Stadium in Rome. It gave me goosebumps just seeing the teams coming out and the incredible noise by the Roma fans and the Liverpool fans trying to join in too. They were pretty much, you couldn't really hear them that much except for different parts of the game, but a great pre-match atmosphere. Now let's move on to TV streaming news. First up, in no particular order, is that SBS, which is a TV company in Australia, is going to offer 25 FIFA World Cup matches live, free, and in HD with exclusive commentary from Martin Tyler. Now, Martin Tyler, in previous years, has done work for ESPN, as well as SBS. He's worked for them in the past too. And this is somebody I'm sure that if Fox Sports really wanted to get, they probably could have gotten. But they passed up and went with pretty much an all-American crew. And now Martin Tyler is going to, actually he's probably based in Russia for the commentary, but he's going to do the commentating for SBS in Australia. So it's definitely, if you're down under, it's a good win for you. Now, Comcast has aimed to combat cord cutting by limiting the major internet speed increases to cable subscribers. So what this means is if you're a Comcast subscriber, and you subscribe to just the internet service that they have, you're not going to get the full speed. So in order to get the full speed of internet from Comcast, you have to subscribe to the TV side of, the cable TV, which is ridiculous. At the end of the day, it should be one of those things where if you want to pay for internet and get high-speed internet through Comcast, you can do that. Or if you want to get the TV too and get the best of both worlds, or just the TV, whatever it may be. But Comcast is really pushing hard to try to stop cord cutting. This is not the way to do it, though, Comcast. There's plenty of other options out there. Not always, though. In some areas, Comcast is a monopoly. But just definitely, if you have Comcast and you're dissatisfied with them, just search around. There's usually some other competitors in the area. New ones are being added all the time that you can cut the cord and go with somebody else that doesn't basically hurt you for just wanting internet speeds or fast internet speeds. But so strange moves. Strange moves by Comcast. I understand what they're doing, but it's pretty low ball tactics in my opinion. Now, speaking of cord cutting, Fubo TV is offering new Roku users 1 free month of live TV streaming. The new Roku devices must be purchased in the US at Walmart, Target, Best Buy, or Amazon through July 8th and will include 30 free days of sports, entertainment, and news on Fubo TV, which is priced at $45 per month. So if you don't have a Roku yet, this might be something you might want to consider and get a free month of Fubo TV. Now, big news in the UK and Ireland, and that is that 11 Sports has acquired the rights to La Liga, beating the incumbent Sky Sports. Now, Sky Sports has had La Liga for years. It's been kind of a part of the weekly weekly recipe, so to speak, of soccer fans in the UK getting used to watching kind of late evening games there on Sky Sports. But starting next season, it's moving to 11 Sports. Now, we have some news about El Clasico, which is going to be on this Sunday between Barcelona and Real Madrid. And it promises to be a thrilling encounter between the UEFA Champions League finalist and La Liga title winner. Now, beIN Sports will have two reporters on site at the Camp Nou, featuring Kevin Egan and Pablo Marino, who will be reporting live for beIN Sports and beIN Sports in Espanol, respectively. For the English-language broadcast on beIN Sports, the commentators will be Phil Shane and Ray Hudson. The Spanish-language broadcast will feature Jose Martinez and... Jose Hernandez and Jaime Macias. Now, with several different streaming options available, the one we're recommending for Sunday's broadcast is the Best of Spanish TV package from Sling TV. It's only $10 per month and includes both beIN Sports channels, both the English and the Spanish. Plus, it also includes Universo, Univision, Univision Deportes, Unimas, and a total of 23 channels in all. Plus, the best part is that they're offering a free 7-day trial, so you can sit back and enjoy El Clasico. So sign up for the free 7-day trial to the Best of Spanish TV package at worldsoccertalk.com/elclasico. Again, that's worldsoccertalk.com/elclasico. And last but not least, in the TV streaming news, this past year has been a bloodbath for sports TV companies. And ESPN, now this is comparing May 2018 to May 2017, so in 1 year, ESPN has lost 683,000 homes that used to subscribe to the channel and now do not. So 683 for ESPN. FS1 is down 103,000 subscribers, and NBCSN is down 200,000 subscribers, according to sports TV ratings. So what does this all mean? Well, I think all of us pretty much know that a lot of people are cutting the cord, getting rid of their TV or satellite or cable subscriptions and moving to streaming services. And this is another stat to show that. All right, so let's move on to TV ratings from this past week. Some big numbers that came through. It was 1 million viewers for Club America against Santos Laguna this past weekend on Univision. So again, Liga MX is getting some big numbers. The number that surprised me the most this week was the Real Madrid against Bayern game on FS1 and Fox Deportes. 961,000 viewers combined there, which is a fantastic number when you consider that this game was played during office hours, 2:45 to 4:45 Eastern time in the US. Of course, we know that Real Madrid and Bayern Munich have lots of fans, but still, almost 1 million people watching this match around the United States. Swansea against Chelsea on NBC had 672,000 viewers. Man United had against Arsenal at 646 in the viewers. And LAFC against Seattle on FS1 on Sunday had 248,000 viewers, so a pretty decent number there. But Orlando against Colorado on ESPN on Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern had just 173,000 viewers, so another disappointing number there. Okay, let's move on to listener mailbag. First one is from Steven Santos, who sent in this email. He says, hey guys, Fox forgot another good local announcer, Steve Cangelosi. He has done World Feed games for Fox, ESPN, NBC Sports, etc. They really missed out by sending the whole crew to Russia to announce games. Yeah, and Steve was one of the ones that was on my list of people that I thought would have been included. I was really surprised that he wasn't, because he had been tried out by Fox. So Fox had, well, the last 2 years, tried out a whole bunch of different commentators, mostly for Europa League games, sometimes for some of the Bundesliga games on the Friday, kind of the less high-profile games. And Steve Cangelosi, who's been around the business for a long, long time as a commentator, was one that had tried out for a bunch of those games, but unfortunately didn't make the final cut. Moving on, a comment from on the worldsoccertalk.com website, and this is from CSB. He says, thanks, guys, for a really informative podcast on the imminent Fox fiasco in broadcasting Russia 2018. My guess is that, like me, many fans will be working on their Spanish in the weeks to come via Andres. Next up is the Soccer Heretic. And he posted this through Twitter. He says, I had a lot of issues with the final weeks of Wijnaldum's USSF candidacy, but his non-inclusion on the World Cup team by Fox is absolutely ludicrous. It's just another example of Fox Sports' bungling of sports properties. Fox Sports has become a network for low IQ viewers and beer-guzzling frat boys, not just soccer, but across the board in all sports coverage. I'd watch far more Bundesliga than I do if not for being a Fox property, Lallis and Holden. I'd also like to interject my own theory on why Major League Soccer and USSF are opposed to a Club World Cup expansion, because most years they'd still fail to qualify for it, and it would become yet another competition that eats up their market share of soccer audiences in their own nation. Now, if you do have any questions, feedback, anything for us or anything you'd like us to read out on there in regards to the soccer media business, television, streaming, apps, etc., you can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post comments on the mothership, worldsoccertalk.com. Okay, so let's go ahead and play the interview that we did with Kartik and I did with Telemundo Deportes. We sat down with Andres Cantor and Sami Sadovnik, and also Miguel Gertzwitz, And all three will be commentating the games from Russia, not from a studio in Los Angeles, but from Russia. They're going to be there commentating the games. And we sat down and we wanted to get a better idea of their preparations going into the World Cup. Also, what the experience is like of being in the commentary booth, in the stadiums, and some of their thoughts about some of the teams competing, such as Uruguay and Argentina, etc. So it's a really interesting interview. It's about 20 minutes long, so go ahead and enjoy.
Okay, 32 teams, 23 players per squad. That's over 700 players. So I'm wondering, in terms of when you're going into a World Cup tournament like this, what type of preparation are you doing? And what type of, you know, whether it's pronunciations of names or backgrounds on players? I mean, obviously you have staff that's working with you, I would think, in terms of research. But how much?
You do?
But what type of preparation are you doing, you mean, to get ready for the big event? Whether it's from, you mean, as a commentator or presenters or co-commentators?
I've seen a film of, sound like the old guard film. I've seen games from, I believe it's 26. I'm still trying to get some nations that I haven't seen. I have studied them tactically. I have studied them, I mean, individually. It's obviously easier when you have France, Spain, the big teams, because you see, you know, how they played, the players played all year round, because, yep, you know, you see the games, and we cover the Premier League. So I'm focused more on the teams I haven't seen that much, the Russias, the Saudi Arabia, the Iran, the South Koreas. And nowadays, the pronunciation, you know, we try, or at least in my case, I try to get the pronunciation right. It's not always easy when you have Russia playing Saudi Arabia and you're calling the game in Spanish, to get it right.
Sure.
But the resources nowadays, compared to the old times, it's much easier, because sooner or later, if you Google or if YouTube the name of a player, you'll find an interview where the guy is identifying himself. So it's Al-Salman, you know, you'll hear the Arabic pronunciation, the Iranian pronunciation.
Sure.
And you try to get as close to it as you possibly can, because we know that we are going to have a lot of nationals from those countries watching us because of our style.
Right, sure.
It's almost the same. Yeah, we have to watch from the November FIFA days, the friendly games, and last March, almost 20-25 games and national teams. Growing the tactically and also the pronunciation, who's in the corner kick, who goes to the past,
sure,
to try to get the more information of everybody to, you know, deliver the best experience through the broadcast.
Sure.
Yeah. How has broadcasting the Premier League helped you prepare for the World Cup, because so many of the players that will be from various nations you've covered during the course of the season?
Well, definitely it helps to watch them play, and you learn how they play, you know, being from different countries that are going to play the World Cup. The other day, I mean, lately, just like as a segue to promote the World Cup on Telemundo, we count the players that are playing in a given match in the Premier League that are going to be participating in the World Cup. And the other day, I believe, in between Tottenham and City, I believe out of the 22, at one point there were like 20 that were going to the World Cup. So it helps, obviously, because you get to see them play. But for example, you have a clear example on Vertonghen from Belgium.
Yep.
He plays left center fullback in Tottenham, and Bobby. Roberto Martinez plays him sometimes out left on the national team. So it's interesting to see. You learn, you cover them on Premier League, you see them play, and then if they play out of position in the national team, you know what to say, and you're prepared to tell the audience that, you know, he played 63 games this year playing as a central left midfielder, and now he's playing as a left fullback.
What about like going into preparations for a game? So being in the actual commentary booth, like so for example, like Arlo White will have his piece of paper, and he has like he prints them out on labels and places them on, so he knows kind of his system for figuring out which players are in which positions and has his notes. How much do you have any? I mean, for a lot of you guys, it would be in your heads, but do you have any kind of tools or things that you use in the commentary booth to kind of help you?
What I've learned through the previous World Cups, in the commentary position, there's very limited space.
Right.
I used to take a lot of papers,
sure,
and a lot of notes, and I kept on fumbling notes and didn't remember where they were.
Yeah.
I had them marked, but it's very tough to call a game and start pulling.
Right.
So now all the notes I want to deliver in a game, I have them electronically on my iPad.
Okay.
And I arrange them by either players, topics, etc.
Okay.
I try to carry as few papers as possible to the booth because it's a very confined, very tight space.
Sure.
And when I did that, I prepared so much, so many notes and so many stats sometimes that I used a quarter of them because I couldn't find them, you know, because the game is so dynamic.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Where's the paper, you know?
Sure.
And also you have, you know, the color commentator in your right hand, so
yeah,
he have all the information for the tactics. But I prepare the night before in a piece of paper, like, you know, the lineups,
yep,
and the much information that I can put it through the piece of paper. So it's much better. When you have the official lineups, maybe you change only one, two, or three. I mean,
right.
I have the experience from the Premier League. The match preview, they change only two or three players, so it's,
yeah,
much easier to erase them and put the new names. But
sure.
Yeah, I put much information like the good old times. I mean, old-fashioned way,
yeah,
in a,
yeah,
piece,
yeah,
of paper. I have electronically two of the match information, the stats, or particularly you know, individual player, mm-hmm, how many goals, how many games they played through the season. So, but basically, it's in a couple of pieces of papers, an extra one with the stat information, and,
sure,
and that's it.
I'm going to share with you an additional story, which is funny,
uh-huh,
because it happened to me, which is my nightmare electronically.
Okay.
I have the bad habit, since I don't use Word on iPad that much, or Pages on,
yeah,
iPad.
Yeah, yeah.
I start writing down like an email.
Mm-hmm.
And then I save it as a draft.
Right.
But you know, when you save it, draft, uh-huh, it says delete or save draft.
Right.
And I have big fingers. And one time after doing all the research for a game, I went like this and I deleted it. So that's my nightmare.
That's why I have a backup plan. I mean, I have the piece of paper through the backpack, so you never know. So. Plan B.
Last summer, Confederations Cup, how did that help you prepare for the venues in Russia as much as for the broadcast and the team?
We'll be in four venues. Four venues. So Sochi, Kazan, the Spartak, and St. Petersburg. Only four venues, so much easier.
Right.
To be there, so, yeah.
It's definitely easier, at least in those four cities, to know the lay of the land.
Right.
We know what to expect. We know where the commentary positions are, if they're up high, if they're low.
The best one was the Spartak. The Spartak Stadium in Moscow was in the middle.
Nice.
Back. Yeah,
right.
Down in the middle. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Because St. Petersburg is very high.
Right.
Yeah. So sometimes you have the TV on the booth to,
mm-hmm,
double check.
Right. How hard is it to concentrate on commentating the game? On television, sometimes you can hear the other announcers.
Yeah.
And especially in a confined space, I'm sure it's very confined. So, I mean, obviously you guys are pros, but is it difficult sometimes to concentrate and kind of just not listen to the other commentators or the other announcers?
No, I mean, you hear them, but you can't tell what they're saying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem that I have, the biggest challenge, is not the commentators. It's the nut sound.
The nut sound, yeah.
The nut sound in World Cups is extremely loud.
Mm-hmm.
And we, the way it works is HBS, which is the host broadcasting services,
yeah,
provide each radio and TV outlet its own box. It's not something that we can hear. Adjust.
Sure.
And sometimes, I mean, I remember South Africa. South Africa was
absolutely.
I mean, I dreamt of Vuvuzela for 3 months. You know?
And we tried the original headsets from the booth.
Yeah.
Our headsets, a regular mic with you know, individual headphones. Mm-hmm. We tried everything to avoid, you know, the net sound noise, but. And turning off the other mics, right, everything.
Right. Yeah,
the main problem is the net sound, yeah.
Yeah. But for Russia, you think that'd be okay, though, as far as it should be a better environment?
We'll
I guess, right, yeah.
Even the newer stadiums, the net sound's a problem. They don't have the acoustics to where...
It depends on I mean, I don't think we can judge by confetti. Well, because obviously there were very few foreign fans. I read today the amount of people Mexico's taking, they're taking 50, they bought 54,000 tickets.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't know if, obviously that is a figure that doesn't count only for the Mexico games, because if not, they're going to fill the stadium by themselves. So when you have a contingency of 20,000 Argentinians in a stadium, it's going to be loud.
Yeah. The mic is very sensitive, you know, the mics from the headsets. So, I read, for example, 30,000 Peruvians will be in the first
Peru,
game.
Peru, did you see the number? Peru is almost like 40,000.
How much does that help your broadcast, your commentary, whether it's presenting or whether it's co-commentating? The atmosphere. The atmosphere is electric and it's crazy. Does that raise your game too? Does that give you kind of some inspiration or just some, I mean, does it make you try
of
harder?
Of course, it's a passionate game, so it works. It helps a lot.
Sure.
These guys in play-by-play, I think they may feel something different. Mm-hmm. For me as a presenter, it feels different, especially when Mexico plays. So it means a lot. It means a lot for us.
Yeah.
How people leave soccer. I don't know Russians. They're too quiet, but...
right. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question about Uruguay. Tavares has decided not to play any matches in Europe, right? Their camp is in Uruguay. They're going to play friendlies in Uruguay and then travel to Russia. Is that unusual from the way you viewed this in the past? Do you think that's a good move or mistake?
I don't see any bad in it. I think they're playing one farewell game in Montevideo, and then they're off. If that's what they're going to do, I find it... I mean, he knows his team.
Yeah.
He's got it. You know, he doesn't need to play anybody and risk, you know, an injury. You know, players, when you're 10 days away from the World Cup, sometimes it's not conducive to... You know, the players don't play their best because they don't want to risk it.
Yeah.
So I don't see anything bad if that's what they're going to decide to do.
You never know the pitch, the conditions of the pitch. So
I mean,
it's safe.
Right.
And again, I make an emphasis because you asked about Uruguay. Uruguay has, I mean, he knows his team.
Yeah.
From 15
Argentina,
years.
Argentina
has been a manager longer than anyone. He's got
and
veteran
sometimes
team.
It's risky, you know, the overtrain. I mean, it happens with Colombia in 94, and I remember Peru in 82. They made a 3 month before the World Cup, you know, a tour from, I mean, they played almost 8 or 9 games before the World Cup. It's a lot,
that's
you know,
lot.
3 months out of the country and then plus 4 weeks
in
the World Cup.
What was it? It was France 98 also.
Yeah. Away 2 months
like
before
games.
The World Cup.
They played 10
out,
games.
You know, family and, you know, extra training. It's a risk.
Yeah.
You know, it's a double. It's risky. So now you have at least three games before the first official game of the World Cup.
They are tired.
They
play a lot of games before the World Cup, so they keep it safe.
And I think also with Uruguay, there was the equation that he has players on Barcelona, PSG. They'll be playing late. They're both out of the Champions League, but he didn't know
Barcelona.
Not anymore, right. He didn't know that.
What are the plans to go? I mean, when will you guys leave to go head to Russia and start getting used to, I mean, the jet lag and get arriving there?
We'll leave June 5th.
5th, okay. So you have about a week. Kind of just
We come back December 19th.
After like a long vacation on the Caribbean.
So you have over a week to acclimate.
Before,
yeah.
More than a week, yeah. you know, for the jet lag and, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So your schedule during the World Cup, you're moving city to city, venue to venue, every day almost, during the group stage.
Almost.
How do you manage that?
That's a good question.
I'll be in Moscow, so I'm going to be comfortable.
You're going to be the NBA guys. Yeah,
yeah, right.
You'll
be HBS?
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Well, it's, you know, I cannot foresee how it's going to be. It's not going to be easy. We, at least in my case, I'm taking a lot of overnight flights to get from one place to the other, and sometimes calling games with little or no sleep, which is not conducive to helping my voice, but we will see. But it's, you know, like my friend Carlos Bilardo, world champion coach from Argentina, said, in a World Cup, you don't have any, you're not never tired, you're never cold, you're never hot, you're never hungry. You're there and you gotta enjoy it.
Right.
And it's only a month every 4 years. So that's the way I approach it, even though obviously at 55 it ain't gonna be easier than when I was 28 with this, but we'll see.
Afterwards, I mean, it's been a lot of work and preparation going into it, and it is a marathon. It's hard every single day. Afterwards, do you guys feel, do you usually then just almost collapse and just need a break just because it's so much, so intensive?
No, I can't sleep almost. No. Yeah, you have, you know, excitement top, so you have to lay down.
Depends who wins.
Yeah, depends who wins, right. And try to rest as much as possible, be quiet. I mean, I guess I try to be quiet and irritated and prepare the next game. I mean, still you're on the road and have the next game and the next game, so... But try to rest and be quiet as much as possible after...
Do you have any remedies for your throat to make sure the next day, next match you call is...
Like hot tea or anything?
Yeah, hot
like
tea or anything? Or
no. No, I try some honey. I have some in the past World Cups. So every once in the World Cup, I have a cortisone to to clean my throat. So I have some honey, you know, hot tea. But I mean, not hot or cold, it's even worse or better. So, yeah.
Well, it usually happens, I think your question was after the World Cup.
Right.
Even though you're very tired, you start getting World Cup withdrawals right away.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
You have so much adrenaline going in your system for 40 days, basically, or 35 days, whatever. That, like, okay, you wake up July 16th, where's my next game? You're tired, but like, oh my God.
Well, we have to go then, July 16th at 7:30, we'll have the country. So. We have to be at the airport at 3 a.m. after the final. So.
Right.
What's your sense around the expectations for Argentina? When I talk to Argentines, it's either they're expecting this team to do very well in this World Cup, or they're expecting them to crash out of the group stage. There's no happy medium, it seems.
In Argentina, there is no medium but winning the World Cup.
Right.
I'm from Argentina, and I can tell you that, you know, we go into every World Cup with the aim to win it. There is, you will hear obviously, everyone in the world of football that, you know, being in the top four and being in the top, getting to the final and losing it in Argentina.
About the group stage,
it's a big accomplishment, I guess. You know, 30 years from now, Messi will sit down with his kids and say, you know, I played in two World Cup finals, hopefully.
Yeah.
Or
two Copa finals.
Yeah.
Three Copa finals, actually.
But he hasn't had the silverware to show, so that's the way we are, unfortunately, because, I don't know if unfortunately, I mean, it's fortunate that we have had, since 1978 on, you know, the expectations of the team to go all the way through the final. So I don't think anybody will be happy crashing out in the quarters, and it will be a huge, huge negative story if they crash out against Iceland, Croatia, Nigeria.
So last question is, what one thing are you most looking forward to at this World Cup for each of you? What's the one thing you're most looking forward to?
One thing.
The opening game. It's been a long journey to get here, I mean, Telemundo has had the rights since October 25th, 2011.
Yeah.
It's like a dream come true to be able to call the World Cup on Telemundo. It's finally here. Russia against Saudi Arabia will be, for me, Argentina against Brazil. Mm-hmm. It's not the most glamorous of opening games, but regardless, it will be a match to remember when they tell you 3-2, you're on.
Yeah.
It's I get goosebumps just thinking about it.
Me too.
Yeah, of course, this is an experience. For me, it's my first game will be Uruguay, Egypt, the next day after the opening in Ekaterinburg. So
it will be
a very good game, and of course broadcast and see my national team in the World Cup, because I remember I was a fan. I mean, I watch on TV in Spain in 82, so
yep.
And then for us and for me it's a great opportunity after four World Cups on the radio in this country and two World Cups on TV in my country, the first time, and the great opportunity to broadcast on national TV in US and in Spanish with a great group of professionals. So for me it's that's the main issue.
Excellent.
It's a dream job. It's every broadcaster, every sportscaster that works in this, when you ask what will be your special event, they're always going to tell you the World Cup. So for us, the World Cup, it's a dream come true.
Yeah.
For me, it's my first World Cup in the United States. I made six in Mexico, and it's special because in Mexico you just focus on Mexico. It's a special story, and here you have all type of nationalities, so it's a great responsibility. Yeah. So.
Okay, so if you're listening and you want to go ahead and find me on the internet, you can find me at World Soccer Talk. Kartik will be back next week. You can find him on Twitter at KKFLA737. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. Enjoy your football.